Beijing warns Washington, don't fool around with the debt ceiling.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Jeremy Hobson. As Vice President Biden convenes yet another bipartisan meeting today to try and reach a deal to raise the federal debt limit, there's a warning from one of America's biggest creditors, China, which holds more than $1 trillion of U.S. debt. Marketplace's Amy Scott joins us live with the details. Amy, what is Beijing saying?
Well, in a press briefing yesterday, a foreign ministry spokesman took a moment to address the fiscal situation here in the U.S. as we near that deadline to raise the debt limit. If we were to miss the deadline, we wouldn't be able to pay bills on some of our bonds, including to the largest buyer of those bonds, China. Meanwhile, a Chinese central bank advisor said a default would be playing with fire. I talked to Glenn McGuire, Asia chief economist at Societe Generale Hong Kong. He says a short-term default would set a dangerous precedent.
We could see a series of rolling defaults, which would ultimately erode, one, the value of the U.S. Treasury instruments, and two, the U.S. dollar. So it would be a double whammy for China in that sense.
And what he means by rolling defaults is that every time we get close to the debt ceiling, this could become a shortcut to avoid meaningful reforms.
And Amy, the Treasury Secretary has said that August 2nd is the deadline to raise the debt ceiling before we start defaulting. There's still no deal. Is China right to be worried?
The idea is gaining some traction among Republican leaders. You know, they see it as a way of forcing deep spending cuts. But even a default of a couple of days, China says, could destabilize the global economy.
Marketplace's Amy Scott, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Well, later this morning, we'll find out how much the United States is buying and selling from other countries when the Commerce Department releases the latest figures on international trade. President Obama has said the future of American competitiveness depends on exports, and he wants to double them in the next few years. But with all that exporting, could the outsourcing of jobs follow? Jennifer Collins has that story.
Jared Carr's family owns Osagian Canoes in Lebanon, Missouri. Carr has always wanted to export more of the boats. The trouble was, the shipping added $500 to a $1,000 canoe.
With our canoes, you can't really fold them up. I wish I could create the one that was like the Jetsons car.
So instead of making a canoe that collapsed into that briefcase George Jetson carried to work, Carr hired a small manufacturer in Denmark to do the finishing work.
By not welding them together, we're able to stack them up in hundreds and 200s where we can actually ship them and make it cost effective for the end user.
And it puts Osagian among the ranks of the 250,000 U.S. small businesses that bring in $500 billion a year through exports.
Small businesses are the fastest growing part of exports.
Karen Mills is the head of the Small Business Administration. Her agency, along with the Commerce Department, advises small businesses to access loans and trains them to tap into overseas markets. Osagian attended a training last year.
More exports means more American jobs.
But it may mean sending some jobs overseas. Dante DiGregorio teaches international trade at the University of New Mexico. He says there's a fine line between exporting and outsourcing.
In the process of developing export ties, most international partners want to see it in both directions.
Chile buys mining equipment from the U.S., but Chilean workers put it together. South Korea buys high-tech equipment from the U.S., but it's installed by Korean engineers. He says that kind of activity is a good thing.
Trade is a two-way street, and there can be direct benefits to the U.S. from certain outsourced activities.
Osagian hires at least two workers in Missouri for every person in Denmark. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
And let's do the numbers. Stocks are mixed this morning across Europe and Asia. On Wall Street yesterday, a sixth day of losses for the Dow. It fell 21 points to close at 12,048. The Dow is now on its longest losing streak since July of last year.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by LendingTree, providing up to 4 loan offers from a network of lenders. Learn more at LendingTree.com or 1-800-555-8733. By Manta, connecting millions of small business owners with new customers every day, on the web at Manta.com. And by Indiana University's Kelley School of Business, providing a personalized approach to career advancement. Learn more at kellei.iu.edu.
Remember that Russian spy, Anna Chapman, the redhead who became the face of the Russian spy ring the FBI discovered in New York last year? Well, it appears she's traded in the shoe phone for a BlackBerry. She's launching a new venture capital firm to encourage entrepreneurship in Russia, as Peter Van Dyke reports now from Moscow.
When spies are uncovered, they tend to return home and quietly disappear back into the shadows. Not Anna Chapman. She's appeared in a sexy photo shoot and on the catwalk, watched a rocket launch, and joined the youth wing of the ruling United Russia Party. Now she says she is going to help young Russian entrepreneurs find investors for high-tech startups. Ben Aris, the editor of Business New Europe, says the Kremlin is using her as a marketing tool.
She's a celebrity, and that's about the size of it. I can't see any serious venture capital investor going in with her.
But within Russia, she is taken more seriously.
Working for the KGB carries a lot more prestige, or at least different connotations to what it does in the West. And so in that sense, I think she probably has a stronger standing than she does in the West.
The Kremlin is trying everything it can think of to attract investment. If this doesn't work, the former spy still has her banking job and weekly TV show to fall back on. In Moscow, I'm Peter Van Dyke for Marketplace.
And finally to Northampton, Massachusetts, where a guy got a letter from Bank of America that was definitely worth saving. It said his home would be foreclosed on if he didn't pay up immediately. The amount he owed, according to the letter, $0.00. After the local TV station WWLP did a story on this, Bank of America told the man he could stay in his home and they sent him a $150 check for the trouble. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. And this is APM, American Public Media.
In China, one school is trying to revolutionize its curriculum by introducing indie rock.
They just started the rock band. To be perfectly honest with you, I've heard them. They're not very good. But it's something that they love doing.
I'm Tess Vigeland. Out goes memorization, in comes fun. That's next time on Marketplace from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.